Mainstream Mental Health Radio with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something?
Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues, revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thank you very much for listening, as we really do appreciate it here. We have another fantastic show for you today. And remember to check out our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And let your friends know about our radio show. You can listen to our podcast on iTunes at blogtalkradio.com, Mainstream Mental Health. So today, let's look at our news stories of the week. One of them is, dear to my heart, is it time to take a sick day for a mental health break? CBS News had a story on calling in sick for a mental health work break. And I know lots of people have joked about, oh, I'm taking a mental health day, and then they never do. And what we got to remember is if we don't take care of ourselves, we're not going to be able to do the best for the people we work for and the people we take care of. In the United States, we are notorious for not taking vacations and breaks from work. In fact, if you look at how much we work when we're sick, and we don't do as good a job as we could if we're all the way together. And I know some of us, we just feel like we're unable to get ahead if we don't take a break, or we aren't able to get ahead when we do take breaks, but it's very important. In fact, the CBS News story talks about Madeline Parker, who messaged her team at work to tell her that she was taking a couple of sick days for mental health reasons. She said, quote, I'm taking today and tomorrow to focus on my mental health. Hopefully I'll be back next week refreshed and back to 100%. You know, I think if more people did that and they talked openly about their mental health stuff, again, that would help destigmatize mental health, and it's an important thing. And again, we always feel pressure. Parker herself, she is a web designer for OLARC in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And she's been very open with her experiences struggling with her own depression and anxiety. And that depression and anxiety for her hasn't always responded to medication. And it doesn't for everybody. When she approached her CEO, Ben Congleton, and he read her note, he was extremely supportive of her and actually wrote back to her, hey, Madeline, I just wanted to personally thank you for sending emails like this. Every time you do, I use it as a reminder of the importance of using sick days for mental health, and I can't believe this is not standard practice at all organizations. Now, I don't know if we'll be able to do that in my lifetime and make it standard practice, but I know that mental health breaks are very important in our culture, and we don't take them, and I think that hurts us. That hurts our productivity, and whether or not we do it openly like she does with her boss, or if she just takes it on her own and takes it as a sick day flat without telling anybody, I think it's important that we should be able to do that. Another break we need to get, and we don't always get it, is we get information overload, and we're always listening to news, to talk radio, to television, to radio, to music. And every day we hear more and more information. In fact, research indicates that Americans in general consume about 34 gigabytes of content every day and encounter in general 100,000 written words every day. And that comes from various sources that you see that, and whether you're actually picking up a book or you're reading an email, you're seeing a sign on the road when you're driving, or, you know, you're looking at your Facebook or Instagram. If you think about 100,000 written words, what really is 100,000 written words? Well, if you think about it in context, Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace is 460,000 words. So every day you're exposing yourself to basically a quarter of War and Peace. And at that rate, in 4 to 4.5 days, you should have the whole book written. And imagine that. We know that most people who read that are devout fans of Russian literature. And Russian literature in general is very wordy just for that whole genre. That means, again, that we're encountering more information, essentially, than we can take in and process, according to literary and cognitive load theory. So we all need a language break, even if we're not feeling overloaded by the content and what's in there. So if we keep looking at more information on this, we know that writers like Cormac MacArthur and William S. Burroughs have long claimed that language is a parasite or an infectious virus, and too much can leave you feeling feverish, tired, drained, and weak. And their view is supported by numerous studies in cognitive load theory and information overload in various fields, including psychology, education, and business. All right, just a reminder, you are listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show, and my name is Dr. John Huber. Poor sleep may increase suicidal thoughts. Well, increased suicidal thoughts are problematic in general, and sleep for most Americans is problematic in general. In fact, I posted this morning on my social media something along the lines of, you know, when was the last time anybody had a good night's sleep? And if they could tell me about it, because I don't remember what a good night's sleep is like. And all my friends that responded were in agreement with me. They hadn't had a good night's sleep in a very long time. And I think a lot of people are in that situation. We just have so many pressures going on. And we have to stay on top of things. Sleep is one of them. It is very important for us in our reframing and restructuring of our world, processing that information. Every night we go through and look at that. Well, if you have already some depression and anxiety going on, we know, and the research study here that was broadcast on CBS News says that it actually does increase suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation, when you're not getting enough sleep. And you know, as young adults, a lot of times we have the potential to intervene in our mental health activities. And if all we have to do is work on getting better night's sleep for us to have a better, safer, fuller life, it makes a lot of sense that we should start doing that, regardless of your age. You know, according to the lead author, Rebecca Burnett, suicide is a tragic outcome of psychiatric illness interacting with multiple biological, psychological, and social risk factors. Sleep is one of those risk factors. She is a suicidologist and an assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral science from Stanford University Medical School. And she basically says that sleep disturbances stand apart from other risk factors because they are visible as warning signs. I know in my work at the hospitals, that's one of the things that I look at. I can pull up the charts. We document, the nurses document when the patients are asleep and when they're awake. And I have that I can sit and count and measure real simply and address that with my patients. And that behavior, the significant thing about that is that sleep itself is non-stigmatizing. A lot of people have different sleep issues as they go along the way.
Just a reminder, this is Dr. John Huber on Mainstream Mental Health Radio. And we have a special guest today, Dr. Courtney Warren. She's Associate Adjunct Professor at Psychology at UNLV. And she has a recent article out on whether to friend or unfriend your ex. Dr. Courtney, Warren, thank you for coming to our show today, and how are you?
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I'm great, thank you.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit, for those who haven't read the article, just kind of summarize the article for us. And then I have some questions because my wife and I have talked
Absolutely.
About this very thing. So.
Have you? Well, you know, social media is everywhere, right? It's becoming increasingly popular to the degree that it dominates our lives. Research suggests that we spend an average of 25 hours a week using some form of media, that's crazy. It's so much time. And on these outlets like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you know, all of these, you are really saturated with information about celebrities and news and messages from friends. But for people who are in relationships, you're also inundated with information about the people in your life. And when you're going through a breakup, that often includes your ex. And so that can lead people to some really challenging decisions when they're going through a breakup about whether to stay friends with their ex as they're going through the breakup or to unfriend them, which to some people feels a little bit mean, right? Like all of a sudden I'm going to unfriend you and I don't want anything to do with you anymore. So the article is really about how you might decide whether you should friend or unfriend your ex when you're going through a breakup and some of the challenges that you might face if you don't unfriend your ex.
Wow. Well, in my case, you know, we've been married 22 years and lived together for about 3 before then. So we were, you know, through with all the exes long before social media. So I think our experience is a little bit different. But I can see, you know, after with the students I work with and the interns and graduate students, as they go through one relation to the next, how that can add some serious challenges to their life in general.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. And certainly it sounds like in your situation, if you have exes, but there isn't any reaction to them, meaning, you know, you probably do have exes, most of us do, that we really care about, that are wonderful people, but you're not pining over them. You're also not traumatized by the breakup. You're not emotionally attached in that way. Then it's probably just fine to stay friends. But if you're in a situation where you're really highly reactive, you're feeling depressed, you're feeling like you're having a hard time moving on, having continued access to information about your ex is going to make the process of moving forward much harder. And that's one of the main reasons why it's a really good idea for many people to not have contact with their ex, which includes unfriending them on their social media sites.
Right. Well, I think that's a good idea in general with a lot of the patients I see too, because they are attached to them, even if they're not, or even if they're the ones who initiated the breakup, you know, there's still that emotional connection to them.
Absolutely.
So what,
and, you know, so much of going through a breakup is taking space. You kind of have to recreate your life, right? Because you need to create a life without that significant other. And if you don't have that space, it can be much harder to do.
Well, and then the problems with social media, you know, the fact that you can just chime in at any time and really play with somebody's mind, I think that is – especially troubling. And then you compound that with issues of self-esteem and like that, and man, you're just asking for trouble.
Yes. I treat, as a clinician, I work with a lot of students, but also with a lot of patients who are going through life challenges and struggles. And I think one of the hardest things that I see if they stay on social media, even if they've unfriended their ex, is that they'll get updates about their ex from friends of friends. Right?
Right.
So it'll just kind of show up and they're really making progress and they're feeling better about themselves as a single person. Then all of a sudden they see a picture of their ex on a date with somebody else, right? Or on a trip or looking happy or any version of, they went to a restaurant they used to go to. And now, oh my gosh, that pang of like brutal, bring you to your knees painfulness is right there.
Well, and I see it with some of my divorced couples, you know, they come in and, you know, they're really upset because their child was out doing something with mom and the new boyfriend. Oh,
yeah.
And it's like, wait, you know, that creates a lot. Oh, he's just trying to replace me. I'm like, we don't know that. Calm down. You know,
right.
You know how that goes. It's like, wait a minute. Yeah. I can see all these problems. Just replacing dad, replacing mom, especially if there's kids involved. But what about the patient who has like underlying mental health? You know, they may have depression or anxiety or maybe some bipolar going on, that kind of stuff. What are there any special issues with those individuals?
The special issues are that in general, if somebody is struggling with any mental health condition and you put a massive stressor on them, like breaking up in a situation that's painful, because breaking up is hard for all of us, even if it's something you want, like you said, even if you choose it, breaking up isn't any fun. I mean, it's pretty horrible to go through a breakup. So if you have somebody who's already feeling anxious or depressed or lonely or has manic tendencies and you add the breakup on top of it, they're much more likely to be reactive in general, right? And it could be that the depression kind of flares up or the anxiety flares up. And I think there's probably a difference between someone who's going through a breakup kind of on a normal scale of challenge, where it's going to be challenging, but you're doing okay, from the person who's really, really struggling. And for the person who's really, really struggling, I would really recommend that they – A, get off social media that gives them any information about their ex, and then B, if they're going to be on social media, that they try to make it only supportive outlets. So, for example, there are some really good mental health-related outcomes, kind of online platforms and communities for people who are going through breakups. There's one called exaholics.com, which is really a support group for people who are going through breakups but really struggling with it. And if they can kind of isolate themselves to only social media that helps promote them feeling and moving forward, that could be very helpful. In addition to therapy, of course, which is helpful for all of us.
Of course. We both understand that. We both do that.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
That's sometimes very hard to get because of the social stigma associated with it. And then, especially being on social media, what if somebody finds out? And you know, it's and my whole thing is, what if? You know, you're getting help.
Yeah.
If you have a cold, you go to the doctor. So, you know.
What if somebody finds out you're in therapy or you're going through a rough time? Okay, it's okay, right?
That's right.
The more
we normalize
that, the better. It's okay. We all struggle. I promise you this. Life is hard. Humans struggle.
That's part of being human.
Credit. Yes, it is. It is. When you actually say, I'm struggling and I'm going to take care of myself by getting help, that shows me so much more strength than you're struggling and you won't get help.
Well, an insight, too, which, you know, is key. If we're looking at whether a patient's going to be successful, it's just like when parents bring me kids, you know, for therapy and the kids don't want to be there because they don't think they have a problem. You know, they're not very successful. But when I have a kid who's needing help and they know it and they're asking for help, it's amazing what they can accomplish.
Oh, so true. Yeah, absolutely true. And it helps to remember that, you know, most humans are going to go through many breakups in their lifetime. This is an experience all of us have. And if you are really heartbroken, you know, there's a lot of brain-based research about what happens to our brain when we're in love,
right?
You probably know some of this. And it can look very much like an addiction. It can look very much like you're high on this person, right? And if that's
for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard. When you break up, it's going to really suck, but it's going to get better one day at a time. You know, the more we can remind people this is hard, we most of us go through this, and it's going to get easier. You just have to get through one day at a time until, you know, soon that'll be 1 month at a time, and you'll move forward.
That's right. Well, you know, and I try to explain that to a lot of my patients, but, you know, the reality of it is, as we go through each one of these failed relationships, they're not really failed relationships. You're learning how to be in a relationship and what your expectations are in a relationship and what you want out of a relationship. And, you know, I reflect back on me and my wife. We talk about some of our past relationships and the struggles. And, you know, it's like those aren't things to be ashamed of. Those are things to be proud of. You learn about how to be a partner in a committed relationship because of those. It's not a shameful thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I am, one of my specialty areas is self-deception. So the ways that we aren't honest with ourselves. And I think one of the biggest gifts that we get from relationships is that even when it's the worst possible situation, right? You think you're going to die. It hurts so much.
Right.
The gift is you can look in the mirror and you can start to tease out how you got here. And the more you understand yourself, and then the more you're able to acknowledge what you did to contribute to this relationship not working and to picking this person, the more opportunity you have to make different choices in the future. And that is a beautiful, wonderful thing.
It is, definitely. Well, we know with social media, too, that, you know, the research out there shows that if you're active on 7 or more of these, you have 3 times the likelihood of being clinically depressed than the general population. And we know that there's some benefits for being on just a few social media outlets, like staying in touch with friends and family. And you just identified some support groups for people who are going through breakups, and those are things there. So the patients that I have, one of the things I try to do is get them to limit what exposure they get out there, especially when they're dealing with a breakup. Do you think that that's a good way to proceed with patients? Because, again, you know, the whole liking cycle of Facebook and Instagram and like that, you know, we know we're getting those endorphin bumps from all those likes, and it's an addiction in a lot of ways too.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. And I absolutely agree with you. Even reminding and doing some psychoeducation, reminding people that you're almost never going to see on Facebook or your social media outlets the person who's posting the photo of them having the most miserable day, looking terrible. You know, they're going to post the happy-go-lucky pictures that makes life look perfect every day. And that is just not true. But that is one of the reasons that the research shows that our reactions to social media lead to depression and to just generally feeling bad, right? Is that we are engaging in this social comparison process where we're looking at the Facebook post or the Twitter feed and we're thinking, wow, everybody has this awesome life except me. And so even getting our patients to recognize, you know, this is a really small snippet of what a person's experience is that you're seeing them present. It's not a realistic picture of what their whole life looks like. That also helps.
Well, and those wonderful vacations that they got a second mortgage on their home to pay for that you don't know about,
yes.
You know?
Right?
It's like,
you don't, you know. You don't see the divorce picture or the 2 a.m.
No.
I just had a baby and I'm losing my mind picture or the whatever. Yeah.
No, but I get the calls. I get the calls at 2 a.m. I don't know about you. But
oh, yes, I certainly do. But it doesn't show up on social media, let me tell you.
No, it does not. I'm the worst mother ever. No, you're not. You're learning how to deal with your kid. Relax.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Well, I think that hurts the whole issue with social or with mental health stigma as well, when everybody sees everybody functioning well. So when I have sources, friends, allies, whatever, they're talking about how they're getting through the day because of their mental health issues and how they're, you know, they had a struggle here. You know, it's like I'm always the first one to be out there. And it's like, awesome, you know, keep moving forward and thanks for sharing. Because it's scary, mm-hmm. You know. But the reality of it is every one of us out there is affected by mental health issues, whether we're going through a divorce or a breakup with a significant other and we're throwing ourselves on Facebook. And it's a scary thing, I know, but everybody goes through it. We just feel like we're the only ones.
Right. I don't know about you, but I am constantly shocked at how hard life is. And I would tell you that I have a pretty objectively amazing life, right? But my gosh, life is not easy. And all of us go through really painful things. And it's part of really the human experience, I think. You know, we have to grapple with death. We have to grapple with love and loss. We have to grapple with who we are and our identity and what do you want to do with your life and relationships. I mean, it's if you take life seriously and try to make choices that are very conscious, it is really, really a lot of work. So I love anytime people can acknowledge that. And if we could do more of that on social media, I would be thrilled. In fact, I'd probably put a post on social media today just in honor of this conversation about whatever's hard for me today. Because
exactly.
It's true. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that is part and parcel to being human. You said that. So if somebody wants to find out more information about you, my listeners, or they want to go and find out maybe some other publications you have and stuff like that, how can they find you?
Please, you can go to choosehonesty.com. And I'm a professor at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. You could find me. Just look up Courtney Warren. I gave a TED Talk on self-deception that's on YouTube. That's pretty easy to find as well.
All right. Awesome. And do you have any essential things that you think my listeners should know, especially if they're going through a breakup right now and are on social media, which is basically all of them?
If you are going through a breakup and you are struggling, I would say pause. Limit your social media contact with anything that reminds you of your ex or the breakup, and really try to focus on yourself. The degree to which you can focus on today and the present moment and creating the life you really want for yourself in the future is what is going to propel you forward. That's what I would say.
Awesome. And I would encourage them to look forward to the future, because it's an amazing thing what we can do with it.
Absolutely.
If we have that positive. Exactly.
It will get easier. It might really get harder for a while, but it will get easier. You can't stay at the bottom forever. It's just like you tell somebody with panic disorder, right? You can't feel this much anxiety forever. It has to come back. So
it has to. Exactly. Something's going
to
reset.
Something has to regress to the mean. It's going to get better.
Yeah. Oh, man. That is so true. So true. Well, I really do appreciate you being on the show today, Dr. Courtney Warren. And I look forward, hopefully, seeing you more out in the media as well, because, you know, my mainstream mental health is all about destigmatizing mental health and helping people realize that it is being human. And I think you're a big part of that. So thank you. And
thank you, John. A pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. And that concludes our show here today on Mainstream Mental Health. Thank you for listening. And I'd like to encourage everybody to share our show at mainstreammentalhealth.org and follow us up on Blog Talk Radio, Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show.com. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.